the expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Ons. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Christ. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it makes some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Roberts, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter. Yay. With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Hey, Barry Corder from the Chattanooga Times Two Press. Do you have a few friends that want you to help you raise some hell? You got a few of those?
I got a few of those.
You got a few of those?
I do.
They going to be at Bonnaroo in a couple of weeks?
I think so.
Yeah.
They don't always put it that way, but it's essentially the same
thing.
Yeah,
because when you look at me, you think Hellraiser.
I know. Yeah, that's not the type that we roll with, but it's the same.
Yeah, thing. Welcome to the What Podcast. This is a Bonnaroo podcast for Bonnarooians, by Bonnarooians, the Bonnarooians being us. That's Barry Corder from the Chattanooga Times Free Press. I'm Brad Steiner from Hits 96 WDOD in Chattanooga, just a few days away. It feels like it's right there in our grasps. It's right there, Barry, and I feel the fever is coming on. The fever's coming on.
Absolutely. We had a probably best meeting that I've attended on Sunday. We had our Bonnaroo group meeting.
Yeah. We got our whole team together. We started planning and strategizing what our campsite was going to be.
Helped that it was over beers on a beautiful day watching minor league baseball.
Right.
It was nice.
Yeah.
But
that's what we suggest you do, by the way. Get your campsite together and start planning what exactly camp is going to be. We have decided to, get the band back together this year and go all out.
The game got upped.
Right. Yes, it did. In which way? In what way do you think the game got upped?
I don't remember so many of us. Brad always is sort of the leader in the of the pack when it comes to amenities.
I like to make it nice for you guys, yes.
Brad brings the solar lights and the picket fence and that kind of.
And the 600 square feet of carpeting.
And the carpet.
Yeah.
But I think everybody on Sunday was into adding this and adding that. I don't want to give anything away, but.
Because there need to be surprises, sure.
Pretty crazy ideas.
Now, the reason why we're going all out is because the anticipation, it feels like every single week there's something that makes us more excited and more excited about the festival. And this week, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm really excited about the Grand Ole Opry.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I was going to say, I may surprise you, but I'm going by there.
Are you?
I like.
Now, wait a second. That sounds like a drive-by. That sounds like a pop-in.
No, I'm going to watch.
Okay.
I'm going to watch. I like good country music. I like old country music. It's not something I live with all the time, but every so often I got to turn it on, turn it up.
Now, they announced the Grand Ole Opry lineup, which I don't really understand what this is going to be. Is this going to be a stage? Is this just going to be a super jam? What exactly is this?
I'm not 100% sure either. I'm wondering if it's like when they had the kind of a New Orleans, was it a tent or a tribute with Alan Toussaint was there.
That's right. And
it was kind of a smaller deal, but it was a lot of New Orleans flavored acts. I'm not 100% sure. I know it's on the schedule. Seems like later in the weekend.
Now, when you say that, I'm not a country. It's on Sunday, by the way. I don't know country music. I mean, I know the name Brother Osborne. I know some of these people that were announced. But go through some of the names. There's one in particular that that caught my attention.
I would think there might be two. Dale McCurry is the headliner.
That's the one.
Yeah, Dale is the, I don't know if you'd call it second generation. He is the Bill Monroe, the living Bill Monroe, I guess. He and his sons continue to tour. I'm not that particular a fan, not particularly that a fan of that type of bluegrass, that nasally, twangy, out of tune. That's not my thing.
Wait, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I said it.
Your combination that you're not into is nasally, twangy, and out of tune?
No.
Oh, come on.
No, not no.
What kind of music fan are you, Barry?
He plays traditional bluegrass, which to me, there's really only one song played three different ways: fast, faster, and faster.
Okay. Okay.
Just my opinion. I know a lot of people like it. I do like a lot of the new grass, as it's called. But I've seen Dale and they're great. I mean, they're all very good at what they do. So I'm looking forward to Bobby Bear. He sort of falls in that, again, right after the Hank Williams and those guys. He's in that sort of outlaw country kind of.
Right. The only song I remember his is Drop Kick Me Jesus.
Exactly.
Drop Kick Me Jesus.
Exactly.
Now, back to Dale McCurry, because one of our campmates has a really great story about Dale McCurry, because he's been to Bonnaroo before.
Yes.
And the story pretty much goes that Dale McCurry is one of these guys that just doesn't care, and he will play anywhere, anytime, with anyone, doesn't matter. He's just old school like that.
Absolutely.
And they were walking around the backstage area, I guess it was before one of his shows or some after one of his shows, doesn't really matter, they don't really remember. I don't really remember the story specifically, but they're walking around backstage, and Dell's sitting there. A couple of his bandmates are sitting there. And out of nowhere, during a conversation that our campmate just struck up with Dale McCurry, they just did a impromptu song right there on the spot.
That sounds about right. I think Dale fits into that Colonel Bruce Hampton sort of
right.
camp.
Right. That's who I was thinking of.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah.
I remember.
Just let's just play.
Let's just play right now.
Don't care who, don't care what.
Sure.
If I can find your groove, you can find mine. Let's play. And that's absolutely Dale. And to add on to what I said, I've always respected that about him. It's just not my go-to listening type.
Who else is on there? So you got
Bobby Bear, Brothers Bobby Bear, Osborne, right. Old Crow Medicine Show, Lucy Silvas, Lanco, Riders in the Sky, and Nikki Lane. So,
okay. All right. So it is. I gotta imagine they're gonna be bringing up some other people too. Like random, hey, why don't you come on stage? Just sounds like that kind of group.
It does sound like that.
And it sort of sounds like this podcast. If you can come on, we'll put you on.
It sounds like a Grand Ole Opry Super Jam.
Right, but haven't they done that before? Didn't they do a Grand Ole Opry Super Jam before? Am I just thinking of the normal bluegrass with Ed Helms?
Ed Helms has hosted a bluegrass thing for the last 3 years running?
It feels like it's a staple. And I think it shocked everybody that wasn't going to be on the lineup this year.
Who knows? He might have been busy or may have run its course. I don't know. But they've done that. And I know they've had some, it's an hour from Nashville. So I know they've had some drop-ins before, which honestly, surprisingly, not as many as you might think, would think, being so close.
Right.
I know AC has gone after, that's AC Entertainment, one of the co-founders. I know they now have an office in Nashville. The Country Fest is that same week.
CMA Fest.
Fest is that same
week.
Well,
the difference between CMA Fest and Bonnaroo is that the CMA Fest are paying them to be there. And not often. I mean, think about this. I mean, if I'm an hour and a half away from you, Barry, are you just going to pop in and help me out?
For free?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Probably not.
Probably not. Maybe once. You better feed me.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, they are.
I can
are.
Barely get to come over to help me fix my plumbing, much less come down an hour and a half, play a show.
So there are those conflicts, which in a way, it's kind of unbelievable that Middle Tennessee is the center of the music universe
for that weekend.
For that weekend.
It's unbelievable. So. And because it's the center of the universe, it attracts so many eyes, ears, one of which is Relix Magazine. Is it? Would you say a Relix or a Relix?
You're
a Relix
or a Relix?
Well, you know what? I'm going to go Relix then, damn it. Fine. You go Relix, I go Relix. Let's see where the cards
tomato,
fall.
Tomato.
When we started compiling a list of people that we wanted to talk to, we had our list, but then more people started coming out of the woodworks who started listening to the podcast. And one of the guys was the editor of Relix Magazine. And he reached out to us early on and said, hey, like the podcast, love to talk to you about it. And I didn't know the history of their connection to Bonnaroo.
Yeah.
I barely knew that they produced the Bonnaroo Beacon, the magazine, Relix Magazine. They do the Bonnaroo Beacon, but I didn't know that they've been there since the beginning.
Somebody asked, did they do the very first one? And I didn't know that answer. I knew because he had told me in his email that he'd been there since the second one, or that they had done it since he had been there since the second one. So I guess maybe I assumed that that's when the beacon started. But yeah, that was really cool. He reached out about week three or four of us doing this, and whatever he could do kind of thing. And so obviously we said we'd love to have you on. And
yeah, because that's a perspective that we don't really have. I mean, we've got some industry people and we've got some Bonnaroo vet people that we've talked to, but I don't know anybody that is sort of almost treats this like breaking news, like a news piece.
Well, I think you mentioned it a couple of times in our discussion with him that he offers an unbiased, he's official but not official, kind of like us. But yeah. I mean, he has an insider's view that we don't have to how the festival work and how other festivals work. That was sort of interesting.
Well, let's talk to him. Mike Greenhouse from Relix Magazine. You going Relix or Relix?
I'm opposite of whatever you're going. Okay. I'm going Relix.
We talked to Mike Greenhouse from Relix Magazine next.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks again for chatting with me. I'm deep in Bonnaroo in my mind right now, too. We're working on the program as we speak. So,
what does that entail? What does that mean?
Let's tell everybody who you are and what you do, because you've got a pretty cool story, I think, as far as Bonnaroo goes.
Yeah, awesome. Well, my name is Mike Greenhouse. I'm the editor-in-chief of Relix Magazine, along with Dean Budnick, who's the other editor-in-chief. And Bonnaroo's had a really long, rich history with Relix. We've been there since the first year in various capacities. I would say our most marquee offering is we produced the Bonnaroo Beacon, which is the daily on-site newspaper for the festival. We've done it every year since the festival's inception. And for about the last 10 years, we've actually also produced the official patrons program, which was given out when people drove into the festival up until last year, and now it is distributed digitally. So, yeah, we've had a really long history of the fest, as well as being fans and friends of the promoters and kind of the whole world there.
Oh, wait a second. Now, hang on a second. When you say the program, do you mean the book that we all get? The book?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Wait a second. The book's leaving?
I love the book.
Starting last year, unfortunately, it's now distributed digitally.
So oh, no.
Everyone, yeah. It's 2018, I guess. Everything is moving online, unfortunately. Fortunately, we are on a podcast right now.
The book was sort of like the thing that I brought back, as if it was like that was my token from each possible year. I still have my very first book from 15 years ago.
Me too.
Well, I know how you feel. You know, when I was younger, I used to go to Disney World with my family a lot, and I'd always bring back the map. It kind of felt like a nice little reminder of all the things I've done. So I was sad that we moved digitally last year, but it's all the same content. We're still actually printing it as we've done producing as we've done in the past on PDF, and now people just be able to print it when they get home or before they leave.
There was something. Sorry to interrupt, but the one of the things that I noticed, and correct me if I'm wrong, but about 12 years ago, the program used to have artist bios in it, and then somehow along the way, those started going away too. Did they not?
Yes. Yeah. The bios were a mainstay in the program for many years, and I think when the internet just became such a go-to resource for the Bonnaroovian community, they moved all the bios onto the website. We still produce original content for the program and have interviews with a bunch of different bands, as well as reflections and some other fun and games, which we're kind of plotting out right now. Unfortunately, people will have to now look on their phones or on their computers, or as I said, use that old printer.
What I was going to say, you mentioned the map that I can always tell how active a Bonnaroo it was for me by how many times that map had been folded
exactly.
and pulled out of my pocket.
Well, I guess this is the official goodbye to the magazine or to the program, and I think that there's only one way to say goodbye to something so important to us, and that is, of course, saying goodbye via Boyz II Men. It's so hard to say goodbye. So should we use this moment just in quietness and
hug it out in
silence to hug and say goodbye to the Bonnaroo program? It was as if we never knew you, Bonnaroo program. Thank you so much for giving us such an amazing run for so long.
Mike, that brings up an interesting point. The internet has been a helpful and kind of hurtful in some ways for guys like you and me in our business. It's made it easier to find information, but it's made it harder in some ways for us to be more creative and find something unique. Is that the way you look at it?
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. You know, Relix, for those listeners who don't know, is still a print magazine. We come out 8 times a year and are distributed nationally. We do have 2 websites, Relix.com and JamBands.com, and both those websites have been around for about 20 years. So, we've always tried to have a robust web presence, but it's a different time. You know, I think that the pendulum has definitely shifted a little bit, and these days people are getting their daily news and their daily updates and their festival announcements and sit-in reports and all that good jazz online. And in a lot of ways, you know, the magazine is kind of like that classic vinyl record, something that you have as a keepsake, maybe some more in-depth coverage, some historical coverage, obviously a great place for large-scale photos and investigative journalism of some sort in the music world. And you know, we love the magazine, and it's still our marquee offering, but it's a different world, and it's especially, you know, since the whole festival scene has started. But, you know, I do think that that's something that makes a festival like Bonnaroo or any kind of camping festival so unique and so amazing. It's because you are in a field where, even though cell reception is a lot better than it was back in the day, you know, you are a little bit remote, and it is a chance to kind of unplug and at least wait to post all your photos a little bit. Although it is fun to run around on Instagram on site.
People who haven't been, let me set the scene again with the Bonnaroo Beacon, because Bonnaroo becomes literally a city of between 60 and 80 or 90,000 people for 4 days. It has its own post office.
Yeah,
you can actually send a postcard with a Bonnaroo city line there,
which is odd because considering we were just talking about technology, you could just text.
You could just text, but it's still cool. But the Beacon is a broadsheet newspaper that comes out each day. So it, you know, not only the only thing missing is they don't deliver a quart of milk at your front door.
One day.
Yeah. But it's really cool. I've always loved, I remember the first time seeing the Beacon, I thought, this is really cool.
It's one of those things that makes Bonnaroo really special. It's one of those really unique things that I don't know if any other festival does.
You know, we do it. Relix produces the daily newspaper at a few other events.
Really?
Bonnaroo has been the longest standing. We've been doing that, as I said, since the first year. We do it at all Fishes festivals. So we'll be doing it this summer at Curveball. We've done it over the years at some events that the Dave Matthews Band has done, and we do it every summer at Lock-In Festival, which is a festival in Virginia that actually our publisher, Pete Shapiro, founded and programs. So, you know, we do it at a couple other events, but, you know, Bonnaroo is unique in both that this is now the 17th year that we've been doing it, and also just because of how all-encompassing and diverse the lineup is. You know, Lock-In has a very purposefully curated focus on kind of jam bands and collaborations, and obviously Fish and Dave Matthews events are very single band focused. But, you know, one of the great things about Bonnaroo is that it does have such an eclectic lineup, and there are so many different stages spread out over, as you just said, at the map, such a large footprint. So I think that there's real value for the newspaper in the sense that, you know, people aren't able to run and see all the music that they would like to, because there are so many stages and you have to kind of hoof it there. You know, Lock-In has one stage with a rotating kind of stage on top of that, so that there's no downtime in music, and Fish's events, again, it's one single stage where people could kind of camp out in front of that. So, you know, doing a newspaper at Bonnaroo kind of allows us to be the eyes and ears for, you know, the places that everyone could get to. And we do print locally in Manchester, so, you know,
That's awesome. Our team's
stays up till 4 or 5, sometimes even 6 in the morning to get that last late night set in there, and get some photos and a recap of the Super Jams and kind of the other late night offerings. And then our marketing team picks it up right and early, and hopefully it's there by the time people, you know, roll out of bed at the crack of 11 a.m.
Well, boy, if you can sleep till 11 a.m. in Bonnaroo, good luck. So how many people do you have actually operating that specific newspaper on a weekend?
You know, the editorial team is you know, Dean Budnick, who started the newspaper and is, as I said, the other editor at Relix, you know, is still our editor in chief and has been doing it for all 17 years. I've actually been to 16 of the 17 Bonnaroos, but I didn't start working on the newspaper until the third year. So I've been doing it every year since then. And we usually have one or two other editorial members and a few photographers, and that's pretty much it. You know, we try to solicit some advanced content, like some previews. So we have some freelance writers do that. And, of course, our advertising team, you know, helps make the paper possible. We have a team of three or four people. And then we have, you know, one or two people from our marketing team distribute it. So wow. It's a really small, tight group of people. And then, you know, once the papers come on site, you know, Bonnaroo's volunteers and support staff are great about getting it around.
That is shocking to me how lean that is.
Yeah.
That's shocking
yeah.
how lean that operation is.
Relix also has an on-site presence. We have the Relix booth where you can get the Bonnaroo Beacon as well as subscribe to the magazine. And we do have a little bit more robust team down there selling the magazines. You know, sometimes we have between 12 and 16 people there. But, you know, between getting the booth together, selling magazines, hosting some like meet and greets, and, mm-hmm. and dealing with friends and sponsors and whatnot, you know, the actual team working in the newspaper is pretty lean and mean.
Is that the event that everybody on staff volunteers for around the year?
Yeah, I think that is definitely one of the most asked to attend events of all the festivals we do, as well as you know, Lock and the Fish Festival. Right. So pretty much the three papers where we do, the three festivals where we do our newspapers are always in high demand.
You'd be a good one to ask, and I'm not trying to stir anything back up because the ship has sailed, and personally I've understood it. But from your guys' point of view, how have you seen the Bonnaroo shift, the lineup shift? Because you know it started as a jam band festival, and so many people thought it should always be that. So particularly because of your magazine audience and your online audience, what is that sort of shift been like for you guys?
Well, you know, I think it, you know, as you said, it's there's definitely been a shift over the last 17 years, and I think in a lot of ways, by the festival shifting, it's allowed it to continue on and thrive, and you know, people's music interests change, and the demographic of people who want to go and camp for multiple days and have this immersive experience, you know, their interests change as that demographic gets older and spreads out. But, you know, I feel that a lot of the core ethos of the festival, you know, has remained. And I've always felt, especially in some of the middle years when you would have a band like Radiohead or Metallica or some of the classic rock and hip-hop legends who have come through, it was almost, from my perspective, like how would these people do a show when they're placed in front of, you know, a really live music loving crowd, you know, in kind of a Bonnaroo, in kind of a classic jam band setting, you know, would their show change? Would the audience interaction change? Would their set list change? And it's been a really interesting experience kind of watching how that give and take, you know, mm-hmm. goes at that. I think one of the reasons that first Radiohead show in 2006 was considered by them and many others to be one of the greatest American Radiohead shows ever is because they were playing for that passionate, you know, audience of people who were weaned on jam bands and grew up in that world. And, you know, from people throwing glow sticks to them being allowed to play a little bit longer and look a little bit deeper into their set list, I think that's one of the things that made it such a special experience. And, you know, and I think that there's still a lot of that improvisational spirit in the festival's DNA, whether it's the Super Jam or some of the kind of more activity-oriented events going on throughout the festival. And at the end of the day, the fact that people are camped in a field in Tennessee that was, you know, originally a farm, it kind of, you know, brings it back to that original jam band experience. I love that
note of yours that you're taking just artists and putting them in a jam band festival experience and seeing how their show goes. I never thought about it like that, but then, now that I'm thinking about it, it's pretty surprising how well certain artists do in that space. I mean, even this year, Dua Lipa going from a tent to a main stage, they must have really liked that show to bring her back. Kenny Rogers and Lionel Richie. How do certain of these certain types of artists fit that kind of mold is very surprising.
Yeah, and I think, you know, Lionel Richie and Kenny are great examples of that, because not only did they, you know, do their own performances, which were, you know, really awesome and iconic, and I'm sure for a lot of music fans, especially a lot of younger music fans, the first time a lot of people saw them perform live in person, you know, but both of those people really embraced the spirit. You know, Lionel Richie, you know, made a surprise appearance at the festival when he was in Nashville for an award ceremony. I think the year or two before, he did his own set, and Kenny sat in with Fish during their festival closing set. So they both really embraced that kind of spontaneous spirit, and I think that as the festival has evolved and become more eclectic and more you know, just wider in its interest, I think there's been a shift in music listening habits in general. You know, this is the, you know, the streaming era where people are able to listen to a lot of different types of music and access that really easily, and it's a lot easier to be a fan of hip-hop and jam band music and punk rock and classic rock and electronic music than it was at the first Bonnaroo, where that was, you know, the festival felt very squarely a jam band and Americana festival. You know, just much like Coachella at that point felt very much like an Indian punk festival. But if you look at it now, both those festivals have kind of grown to absorb such a wide swath of music. And at the same time, you know, the jam band scene has always been a genre that has a really broad base. You know, there's electronic-oriented jam bands, there's funk-oriented jam bands, there's country-oriented jam bands, there's indie rock-oriented jam bands. And I think that it was a lot more palatable for people to be able to embrace the fact that there would be a hip-hop band playing after a rock band, playing after a folk band, then maybe in another setting, especially kind of, as I said, in the early years before having kind of eclectic festivals was, you know, more of the norm.
That's one of the things that we had Jim Burris with Columbia Records as our guest last week, and he pointed that out, and I think Ashley Capps did during like the third week of doing this, that. And we had asked, 17 years ago, the music scene was way different. You didn't have nearly the streaming. You didn't have the options to locate music. But you also had an audience that I don't think was looking for new music quite as much as they do now. And I don't think they were looking for live music quite as much then as they do now. Does it feel like to you that Bonnaroo had something to do with that? Because it sure does to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that it's in certain ways it's the chicken and the egg thing. You know, going back to the very first Bonnaroo, and I was there, and I remember a couple of my friends who at that point were not into the jam band scene or the Americana scene. They, you know, I came back and I had the T-shirt, but it had all the bands who played that year listed in the back, and they were looking at it, and they were like, "You don't have to be a jam band fan. You could have gone to Bonnaroo. This is after the first one." And they appointed the people like Norah Jones and Jim White and Blind Boys of Alabama and bands who, you know, were kind of outside of what at least at that point was considered a traditional jam band lineup. And, you know, the next year they really started, you know, opening the floodgates. You had everyone from, you know, Sonic Youth to Neil Young perform, as well as, you know, a little bit deeper focus on some of the maybe jazz and funk stuff that has always been kind of part of the jam band experience, but definitely wasn't kind of a core late 90s, early 2000s, you know, jam band scene mainstay. But at the same time, I think that when a band, especially early on, when a band played Bonnaroo, they definitely, almost like a seal of approval for kind of the jam band world. I think Tool was a great example of that. After they played and did such a great psychedelic performance, I know a lot of people who came back and started listening to Tool albums, and now I feel like they're really part of that ecosystem. You know, at the same time, I think that, you know, knowing the people who have programmed Bonnaroo from the beginning, as well as some people who've programmed it more recently, I think that there's, you know, there was also something in the air of, you know, music becoming more open-minded in terms of, you know, how these different scenes fit together, and the jam band scene in general was expanding at that point. There were, you know, the first wave of what, you know, we called the Livetronica bands, the jam bands who had incorporated a lot of live music. There were some hip hop bands like Jurassic 5 and Blackalicious who had kind of come on the scene, and you also had even, you know, your core jam bands like like Fish and Widespread Panic, incorporating some covers and some styles that weren't natively, you know, part of the Grateful Dead's language, whether it was covering Talking Heads or Velvet Underground, or inviting some people who, you know, like Vic Chestnut, who weren't part of the jam band world, you know, into their shows and onto their stage.
When you, you're being a, you're the first person that we can probably ask this, who's completely not partial to one side or the other, but can you see a big difference in what Bonnaroo was pre-Live Nation to post-Live Nation?
You know, I think that I could see a little change in the booking, just, you know, knowing that there are certain bands that, you know, C3, who books the festival now, has relationships with and books at their festivals, versus some of the bands that, that, you know, maybe some of the other promoters had booked. But, you know, I do have to say from my perspective, and also from talking to people who still run the festival, you know, it's a lot of the people who have always been part of the booking conversation, like Ashley and members of his team, as well as some people from the Super 5 family and their staff, you know, are still involved in the booking of the festival and making sure that the vibe is continuous. And, you know, I think that there's also been an evolution since, you know, Live Nation originally purchased it. If I'm correct, I think this is the second year where the booking team has been a little bit different. I think 3 years ago, you know, when Live Nation owned the festival, they had the Dead & Company and LCD Sound System and Pearl Jam, you know, three bands with, you know, very long histories at the festival, at, you know, as their three headliners. So I don't think it was as you know, clear a break as maybe people like to make it out to be. But, you know, I think that there's been changes in the booking throughout the festival, but that's, I think, really important if you want to keep the festival feeling fresh and also feeling of the moment. A lot of the bands who were at the first Bonnaroo, who I was really excited to see and who I'm still really excited to see when they come through New York, either don't play anymore or they play sporadically or have kind of you know, change their touring approach and kind of aren't part of the festival conversation right now.
Yeah, okay, so the reason I ask that is because this year is the first year, and I don't mean this negatively or positively, it just is, but it's the first year where I can absolutely see a specific Live Nation decision. It's not bathrooms, it's not pushing the walls in closer because the attendance was bad. The set times are different. The set times are shorter. The set times are down to an hour for some of the headliners. I don't recall that ever happening before. I don't recall that being in the Bonnaroo spirit. And I'm wondering if it is a decision based on business, if it's a Live Nation call, or if it's something that you alluded to earlier. The audiences, the way that they absorb this thing is different these days. Their attention spans are different. They don't need an hour and a half show, 2 hour show anymore.
Yeah, to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure, you know, whose decision it was to change that and how they went about deciding the set lengths for the headliners, you know, down throughout the festival. And I'm not sure who would be the best person to speak to about that.
It just feels like a Live Nation move. You know, it feels like the first time, and it may not even be a Live Nation move, but it's the first time I feel like something changed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we just heard today, right? They added, 15 minutes to Eminem, which means they took that from Anderson .Paak. Is that the theory? So it is different. That, going back to what you had said earlier, Mike, it was always sort of, as a fan, you kind of went expecting some of those legend acts or classic rock acts or whatever to open the engine up, so to speak, because they had time. So I don't know. We mentioned it a little bit last week about this change, and I don't think we know either.
It just has struck me ever since somebody pointed it out. It must have been Reddit. It was somebody that listened to the podcast. I can't get it out of my head. I don't know why it's consuming me so much, but it is just so strange. And I don't know if I'm angry about it. I don't know if I'm happy about it. I'm just, it's caught me by surprise, and I don't really know what to make of it.
I don't know how many of these podcasts you've listened to, but this is typical of Brad. He has to find something to obsess over. That's a change that he's convinced is, you know, a Russian conspiracy.
Right. How many hours have we spent talking about those walls 2 years ago?
Yeah, and then he gets over it immediately.
I don't even remember. Yeah.
You know, this is before Bonnaroo was part of part of Live Nation. But I remember a couple years ago, one of the most impactful changes is when they kind of moved to one night having the two headliners. Like, it was, you know, Stevie Wonder and Jay-Z almost like co-headliners.
Right.
And that was kind of an interesting change because it kind of early on there was almost this energy break between when the main tent stages kind of winded down, mm-hmm. and the big headlining shows took place. And once they kind of almost had this like dual headliner thing, it was almost like you had people still, not, I won't say that anyone stayed in the campground to miss Stevie Wonder, but people kind of just spread their attention throughout the festival a little bit more because those tent stages weren't done yet. And, and some people were, running up to the stage to get close to Stevie Wonder really quickly.
That's a great point. And I didn't really think about it in that light, but the parade went away. What you're talking about is that early evening, right before the headliner, people used to go back to camp and shower maybe and catch their breath and get a beer or a nap or whatever. And then the big push for the all-nighter. And mm-hmm. That kind of went away with the earlier headliner, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think this year, actually, I'm just looking at the schedule now, it looks like some of the headliners are even later than usual. I think last year it might have been a little bit later, too, which is kind of cool. That's actually something that they do a lot of European festivals. Like, the headliner will go on at about 11 o'clock instead of 9 o'clock, which, one, because the heat and everything, and two,
where else do you have to be, right?
Yeah, exactly. See so much music. One of the great things about whoever gets the headline Bonnaroo, whether it's a band like the Killers or headline the first time or Wives for Panic at the first one, is that it's the only time during the entire festival that so many people from all different backgrounds who came to the festival for all the type of music kind of come together and have one shared experience. And it is a really cool energy. And I was thinking especially when you talk about some of these rock and roll legends with devoted fan base, whether it's a Billy Joel or Bruce Springsteen, they're playing probably for the first time in a long time for a fan base who maybe isn't as familiar with their music as some of the hardcore fans who go to their show. And it's really interesting to see how they respond to that, both musically, as I said, and as well as with their set list and just with the kind of the whole energy of the experience.
As a professional editor of a well received publication, how do you absorb this festival 15 years, 16 years in? How do you do it? Do you set a playlist? Do you set a graph for yourself? Do you find the artists that you want to find, or do you just throw it up against the wall and see what sticks? What is your plan? How do you go about moving around the farm?
A lot of it has to do with what we're planning to cover and who I want to also check out, for the magazine. But, still to this day, whenever when they announce the lineup, and especially when they drop the set times, I check it out and see who's playing which days. And if there's bands I haven't heard of, and as I've gotten a little bit older, maybe a little bit out of touch with some of the, new electronic music and kind of new rising rock bands, sometimes I'll check some of them out in advance to get a sense of what they sound like, if I want to see their show or talk to friends, both in the industry as well as out of the industry, and get their recommendations. And, once I get on site, I like to bounce around and check out as much music as possible. And over the years, there's been so many times where I've seen a band for the first time at Bonnaroo. And on the flip side, if there's a band that we're covering for the magazine who are doing their Bonnaroo show, it's really cool to kind of see them during that moment as, their career is rising. If you see a band at a smaller club in New York City and you see their big Bonnaroo show playing in front of 10,000 people, and then when they loop back to New York, it's almost like you've had a shared experience with them down in Manchester.
Yeah.
How fluid is that decision? Do you guys go into the weekend knowing who your cover is going to be, or do you come out of it saying, A, B, or C killed it?
The cover for the magazine, whoever's on the cover of the magazine doesn't necessarily correlate to who's playing Bonnaroo. Our June issue is always our festival issue, and we try to either put somebody who is – playing a lot of festivals on the cover, or a younger band who we kind of feel like, you know, captures the, the spirit of that, of the festival experience that summer. So for instance, Jack White is on our June cover this year. He's not at Bonnaroo, but he's at a lot of other great festivals this summer, like Governor's Ball here in New York. But in years past, you know, we've had Blind Morning Jacket on the cover when they played Bonnaroo. We've had Dawes on the cover when they played Bonnaroo. We've had Real Estate on the cover when they played Bonnaroo. And we've had a bunch of other bands who, I feel like kind of capture that entire festival vibe, that mixture of a high energy live show and kind of a passionate fan base on the cover, even if they aren't playing Bonnaroo that specific year.
I'll go to the same question for the magazine or for the Bonnaroo Beacon.
I was going to ask the same thing.
Yeah, just take the same theory. Is that how you work it for the Beacon, or are you just can you be swayed in one direction or the other based on the events of the night?
You know, we always try to have at least one shot of the headliner on the cover. In the past, there's definitely been times where maybe a performer seemed like something of the underdog going in, and we're like, wow, these guys are great, or they clearly were the breakout band of the day, and we put them on the cover of the Beacon the next morning. You know, I think two great examples of that are when Mumford & Sons and Phoenix both played the Witch stage and kind of drew those capacity crowds that it almost felt like headline performances, even though it was the second stage. And
it was the biggest crowd I've ever seen at that stage. I've never seen a bigger stage at that Witch, or the bigger crowd at that Witch stage that day.
Yeah, I think that, you know, when they had Phoenix the year before, I'd never seen a bigger crowd. And then the next year when they had Mumford & Sons, they managed to top that.
And am I wrong or misremembering that Courtney Burnett, you guys did that Thursday show? Wasn't that one of those where sort of the buzz around her was caused you to reach out, or had you already planned that, or am I completely misremembering?
The Thursday night at Bonnaroo has always been a great night of surprises. And again, for people who haven't been to the festival, the two main stages are dark that night. Right. So people are able to kind of run around and check out some of the smaller bands in the tents instead of, you know, finding their spot in these big fields. And every year I feel like there's been, you know, a breakout band dating back to the early years when I think I saw Ray LaMontagne for the first time there.
Yeah.
And I saw Steel Train, which, you know, is featured Jack Antonoff, who became a member of Fun and leader of Bleachers and a great producer, maybe for the second time on that Thursday. And in recent years, I feel like there's always been, you know, one act who maybe we've gone in with our antennas up and then come out, you know, being super fan of. And Courtney was definitely one of them. Going back a few years before that, I think Alt-J did a Thursday night spot
Thursday lineup. If you just compiled what they've done on Thursday into one lineup, oh my God!
Yeah,
I mean, you've got it is just such a wonderful. What are the thing they grow little the hatchery they grow the eggs in, the incubator. It is an amazing incubator for the industry. Whether it's the Shakes, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, Courtney Barnett, Moon Taxi, Alt-J, Thursday is so phenomenal for that reason. It's my favorite day of the entire festival.
Definitely, and I think the ultimate example of that was in 2008 on Thursday when you had MGMT and Vampire Weekend and I think Battles, all in a row in one of those tents.
And
it's pretty good.
And that was like the first time too where members of both Vampire Weekend and MGMT were at the first Bonnaroo, and they came back at that point, I guess, 6 years later as these kind of buzz bands. And it almost was like cemented Thursday as the night where you better get there early because that's tomorrow's headliner. And those bands, even playing in the same bill just feels crazy now. And the fact that they were playing within, an hour of each other is insane.
Well, who's your Thursday pick then? Who do you think it's going to be?
I need to look at the schedule here. I have not got my whole thing.
I'm putting my money on Pigeons Playing Ping Pong.
I love Pigeons Playing Ping Pong. We actually have a big feature of them in the magazine. Spafford's in the jam band scene too. Those bands kind of feel like the next vanguard of kind of the classic jam band festival bands.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that Pigeon set from 1 to 2:30. That's a great time to make some fans.
Don't sleep on Floor either. It's a little poppy, but Floor is very nice.
I thought you were going to say a little punny.
Okay.
But okay. I think this is great. We just, I think unintentionally, maybe we summed Bonnaroo up by the whole Thursday thing. It's the, everybody's in a great mood. The attitude is great. You're still fresh. For the most part, there's bands there that you maybe haven't heard of. So you're experimenting and you walk away with a favorite new band kind of thing. And that to me is...
It started my love affair with Alabama Shakes. Because I saw them at Bonnaroo, I saw them 15 more times in 1 year. I got obsessed because of that show at Bonnaroo.
That Thursday night show they did is one of the most iconic Bonnaroo sets in my mind of all time. Just the way that they kind of came in there and had this energy that felt very Bonnaroo and a mix of all these styles that felt very Bonnaroo and just walked away with so many new fans. And I had been lucky enough to see Brittany and the band in New York maybe a year beforehand or almost a year beforehand, and just to come and see them play for so many people it was amazing.
It's the last time I remember hearing a band on, say, like a social media site or a Spotify, not knowing anything about them, and then being introduced to them in that space, and that's the first time I'm being introduced to them live. Oh my God, how unassuming she was, how looked like they came off the street, and they just blew everybody away. And I'm glad that you think of it as highly as I do, because I can go right back to that feeling that I had the moment that I set eyes on her for the first time. I didn't know what I was expecting, but I sure as hell wasn't expecting that.
It's such an amazing show, and you felt from that moment there that they're now a Bonnaroo band, and they will be with the festival for a long time, and they have, and they've returned as higher on the bill. They've been part of Super Jams and other special events, and you know, I've seen members of the band kind of just wandering around the festival as fans that they haven't even played.
We mentioned it before. There, you can feel it, right? There is a different feeling with a song. We'll hear one on the radio and think, I can imagine that at 1 in the afternoon off the that tent, or I can picture this at 1 in the morning. It just has a different feel to it, at least for me.
Yeah, and that's why we love it so much. That's why we love Bonnaroo so much. So if you were to rattle off the bands that you are absolutely on your must list, who are you going to see?
Let me pull up this.
Let's get Mike's picks. We're going to do Barry and Brad's picks here in a couple of weeks. But let's get Mike's picks. You're a professional with this. You're much more qualified than we are.
You know, I feel like this year there's a couple different groups of bands that I'm really excited for. There's what I would call the Bonnaroo hometown heroes coming back as now kind of these big marquee bands, and I would say, you know, Revivalists and Moon Taxi definitely top that list of bands who have been at the festival for a while and kind of capture that ethos. You know, Sylvanesso, I'm a huge fan of. I think that they're great and capture such a great element of the festival and just psychedelic music in general. For some of the you know, more indie rock side, you know, again, the Broken Social Scene is always someone who I love
so
seeing
much.
And are really seem to be coming, you know, coming back through the ranks. You know, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, again, you know, they're a classic Bonnaroo band of someone who went from being a fan to, you know, volunteering at the festival to now being pretty high up there on the marquee. I'm personally excited to see the Grand Ole Opry stage and see how that plays out. That seems really like a really cool, unique way to kind of have that jam band Bonnaroo spirit, but yet something completely different. At the same time, you know, see a band like Old Crow who are at the first Bonnaroo come back. It's great.
Was at the first Bonnaroroo? I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were at the first one. I believe they might be the only band in the lineup who played the first Bonnaroo and are playing this year in the same form. I think there's probably members of various bands who are at this year's lineup with different projects, but I believe they might be the only one who is there year one and year this year, and a little bit in the smaller font on the Seeing Eye chart of
the smaller font. I like it.
I love Pond, which are part of the Tame Impala family. They're great. Southern Avenue is a really great soul band from Memphis who actually just played New York last week. Who are really awesome. The Texas Gentlemen are, you know, kind of remind me of, you know, the band in that they both back other bands as well as have their own material, and I think are going to walk away with a really strong following. Bruno Major is really great. I had an opportunity to see him last year. You know, going through here, you know, there's just like the legends like Mavis Staples and Amadou Amiriam. I'm psyched for both of them. And, you know, we touched on this a little bit before, but, you know, some of the Thursday bands, again, you know, that's a great time to check out a band like, you know, Friendship, who I've never seen, or, you know, get a little bit deeper into Pigeons playing ping pong and Spafford and kind of see what they bring to this big stage.
I don't want to give away my pick, but I'm going to say this as many times as I can. Japanese breakfast, Japanese breakfast, Japanese breakfast, Japanese breakfast. I love her so much. I cannot wait to see that show and whatever it is, that spacey album of hers, I cannot wait to see that live. You know, we ain't in New York. We don't get them coming through very often.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, that's so much music to jump into, and probably if we talk on the Monday after the festival, I've seen like another five bands we wouldn't even mention
right
now.
Right, exactly.
I guess the way that I think about you is you're removed from the product, but if you didn't really love the product, you wouldn't be doing it on a yearly basis, right?
Absolutely. I mean, Bonnaroo is it's like Thanksgiving. You know, it's every year. It's on that calendar, and you know, it's something that I look forward to throughout the year, and it's very busy, obviously, with the newspaper and the program leading into it, and just having such a big team down there. But it's always a really special experience. There's a lot of friends and industry contacts that I pretty much only get to see in person that weekend, so that's always really special. You know, I have some friends from college who I always run into at the festival, and it's really nice to be able to, you know, reconnect with them and see new music and kind of see how our tastes have changed and expanded and in a lot of ways stayed the same. And it's just a great weekend, and it's also been great to see how the festival's grown. You know, I think there's very few things in life where I could say I've done it pretty much every single year for 17 years.
Right.
And, you know, could kind of pinpoint what I was listening to, where I was in my life, and then coming back to the same place with the same, you know, largely the same infrastructure of the stages and the tents and the fountain and all that jazz, and kind of assess, you know, where things are for myself and for the, you know, the music scene that we love so much.
God, that is a great point. I have committed more of my, I've committed more years to Bonnaroo than I have anything else in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, anything else important to me, not even close to meet the amount of time that I have dedicated to this festival. That is insane now to think about it.
I'm going to guess Hillary would like to beg to differ.
She's number two. She's number two. I've been to more Bonnaroo than I've been with the wife.
Okay, well, I can't do that or the children, but yeah, I'm the same. And it's been fascinating for me to watch literally the music world change. And that 4 days is a big part of it. I also wanted to say, Mike, because you and I are in the same sort of business, the newspaper and the magazine, people don't understand. It's a lot of work, isn't it? I mean, we're up there.
Absolutely,
there's
yeah.
Nowhere else I would rather be, but it's work from...
Guys, you don't... I mean, you see me working, I work very...
Notice I didn't mention his name, Mike. I didn't bring him into this.
Very hard doing this radio thing, guys.
It's a lot of work and then a lot of fun, but even the work is fun. So,
man, thank you so much. Let's grab a show together when we get to Bonnaroo. I'd love to.
We'll
be there.
We'll look you up. You're going to be in the media area most of the time, right?
Oh, I'll be in the media area and running around and seeing music. So,
where do you camp?
We actually stay at one of the hotels.
Okay,
just because
I got
the newspaper. So,
well, come on back.
I mean,
to camp.
Over the years, I have camped many times. You know, I've done it all from a tent next to a car to a RV to a tour bus to the hotel. I've done the whole thing.
Yeah, well, we're back in guest camping, so come on back to Camp Nut Butter.
Absolutely.
Come back and get a Bloody Mary.
Yeah, right.
Sounds great. That sounds awesome.
Thanks so much, Mike. We
thank
appreciate
you so
it.
Much.
The What Podcast with Barry Corder and Brad Steiner. That's Barry. I'm Brad. That was Mike from Relix Magazine. And, you know, we've asked for his picks. We've gotten our campsite picks. Now we want your picks. We want to hear what you are going to be seeing at Bonnaroo, because in the coming weeks, as we get closer, we only have like 3 weeks left, three more podcasts to go. We're going to do Barry's picks here in a few weeks. We'll do my picks. But we want to get your picks, the bands that we must see that you are suggesting to us, and we want you to send them in to us at thewhatpodcast.com.
Yeah, are we more interested in the obvious ones or the surprise ones or just whatever they want to? Just whatever they think.
Well, here's the way that I'm going to give you mine. I'm going to say, here's what I'm going to go to. Here are the ones that you cannot miss.
Yeah.
If I'm suggesting something to my campsite, these are the ones that I want our camp as a group to go to. See, I don't really care if you go with me to insert, you know, Muse. I don't
right.
care.
Right, right.
But there are some artists that I absolutely want my camp to engage with.
Okay.
So that's sort of the way that I go about it. You can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
I just want to hear some of your picks so we can compile them and have our very final podcast right before Bonnaroo be the What Podcast listener picks.
I'll do it the same way. I'll do the ones, these are the ones that I'm going to, and then I'll do the music snob ones. These are the ones that if I turn you on to this person, it will have been a good weekend.
Oh, there you go. Type of thing. That's exactly right. So the whatpodcast.com, send us your list of bands that we'll feature on the podcast. We will pick and choose some of your suggestions, bands that we should see that can't not be missed at Bonnaroo 2018, thewhatpodcast.com, or you can do the_what_podcast on Twitter. I guess next week will be my picks. We'll go my picks.
Yours next week, and then mine, and then we'll hopefully get some input from our listeners who we say it every week, but thank you guys so much.
Thank you very much.
The emails and the notes and the watching the numbers climb has been really very cool.
I wonder if you could, based on now doing this, 10 weeks, if Barry, you could figure out my list. I wonder if you could go ahead and pick what do you think I'm going to be choosing for next week.
See, that's one of those tricks, because if I say yes, you're going to throw curves just to be, you know. And
yeah.
I could probably get close.
I can't wait to see
exactly.
Walden. I can't wait.
I know.
Yeah. I think you can do it. After all this, I think that you know exactly where I'm going this
what
year.
What was it? What's the term that Mike used? Small font bands?
Yes, right. Yeah, those
I like
guys.
That. I wanted to add, we've talked about Bonnaroo being more than just the live music. I had a chance to talk to David Conover. It's been a while ago. There are so many things from the green efforts that they do, the money that goes into Manchester. A lot of you guys aren't, you know, you don't live around here, so you don't follow it as closely as maybe we do. But Bonnaroo pumps a ton of money into Manchester, ton of money into the state. They have all kinds of initiatives. If you're coming for the first time, spend some time in Centaroo to see what all is there. One of those is Grundy County Food Bank. David Conover and his family, they started a program, or they actually picked up a program. They go around at the end of each day and get the extra food.
No kidding.
From the vendors.
Really?
And then they give that to the poor in Grundy County, which is literally, I think, the poorest county in the country.
Yeah, they're everywhere. And boy, if you came at me, if I was, bring me some Cray Musties. Yes, yeah. That's my kind of guy.
Yeah,
that's a really amazing thing for him to do.
There's
a saint.
Ton of that.
And you talked to him.
Yeah, I talked to him because, you know, they're relatively close. And his wife and I went to high school together, of all things.
Oh my goodness.
Totally unrelated. But,
you guys dated.
No, she's a little older.
Okay. Well, that's your type.
But it's really cool, and he gives us a brief little a description of what it is they do, but it's really, really cool that this food, instead of being thrown away, which it would, goes to feed needy people.
I never knew that.
For a long time.
I never knew that. Let's listen to that.
So my name is David Conover. I live in Chattanooga, but about 6 or 7 years ago, 2012, my mom and my stepdad live in Monteagle, Tennessee, and they were directors of the Grundy County Food Bank. And they started a program. A lady that was in touch with Bonnaroo reached out to them to start a program where they took all the unused food, donated food, drinks, vegetables, meat, products, anything that could be not perishable, they could use to donate to the food bank. So in 2011, they started out working directly with the caterer, Wild Hair Catering. Jim Woods is the director of that, and he donated approximately 6,000 pounds of food to the program. And since that time, we've kind of reached out to vendors, caterers, the food services, and each year we've grown from 6,000 to this year almost 50,000 pounds. All the food goes to programs for the Grundy County is one of the poorest counties in the nation. In the nation, in Tennessee especially. The food goes to the programs in Grundy County for the jail, the senior homes, the mental institute there. And so anyway, and then they have families that come and get packs of food, I guess maybe on a weekly or monthly basis. So they make little care packages for just tons of families that in need, and they'll come and pick them up. So we promote it on Monday to all the vendors with a big meeting. We promote it during the week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, pass out brochures and get the word out. They have all our contact information, and on Monday when they're closing down, we make round trips, and we have phone ready and email and everything and text, and just spend all day picking up food and take it to the food bank.
And this was food that would otherwise just be thrown away, right?
Right, exactly. So, yes, you know, a lot of stuff they maybe could take to another show, but a lot of it they just have to dump.
We will see you next week on the What Podcast with my picks.
Hey. How y'all feeling?
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.